Welcome to the Kitchen Counter Podcast, Episode 3, The First Rule of Cooking Club. Hey everybody, Roger here. Thank you so much for downloading this episode of the Kitchen Counter Podcast. So happy to have you along today. We're going to be talking about a couple of things in this episode. First off, I want to talk about the fact that it is fall and what that means for cooking at home. I think it's the best time of year, actually, to cook at home, and I'll tell you why in a minute. And a little later on, I had a chance to talk with my brother, Randy, about the concept of cooking clubs. This is very cool. This is how you can get out of your own kitchen into other people's kitchens, try new things, grow your skills, and have a lot of fun at the same time. Before I get into those topics, I want to let you know real quickly that if you'd like to leave me feedback or get in touch with the show, you can do it a couple of ways. You can send me an email at feedback@kitchencounterpodcast.com, or I'm also trying out something new. You can call in to the show and leave a voicemail, and I'd love to hear your stories, your tips, and if you call in and leave a voicemail, I will get them on the show. The number to do that is 971-208-5493. That's 971-208-5493. Go ahead and call in, leave me a voicemail, and we'd be happy to hear from you. Well, fall is officially here, and that's really good news for home cooks, I think at least. Maybe where you live, fall isn't a big deal because it never dips below 80 degrees, or maybe it never gets any drier or anything like that. But at least here in Oregon, there's a defined change of the season. And this summer has been especially hot and dry. And I'm an Oregon native, and that's okay for a short stretch of time. But eventually, I like to get back to the cooler mornings, the cooler evenings, maybe a little dampness in the air. I know I tell my wife that, and she thinks I'm insane because she loves summer. But for me, what's exciting about fall from a cooking perspective is while summer has its own unique cooking benefits, like you can get out and grill more depending on what climate you live in, you can do lighter food, you're probably eating more salads, more lighter fare. What fall means to me is that you can start getting back into the kitchen. You can start using some of those really good fall vegetables, the root crops, and the squashes. You can start cooking things in what I'd like to call one pot. And these are one pot dinners. And these are some of my favorite things to make. And when I say one pot, I just kind of use that as a collective term for soups, stews, chilies, casseroles, you know, basically anything where most of the meal that you're cooking is done in one pot, kettle, or baking dish, or something to that effect. You may be using other kettles and things to prep some stuff or to prepare some components of the meal, but by and large, the cooking is done, you know, in one pot. So one of my favorite meals of the one pot variety, as I like to call it, is shepherd's pie. If you're not familiar with what shepherd's pie is, you may have heard it referred to. It's I think original name or older name of cottage pie. But so what's cottage pie or shepherd's pie? Well, it's kind of just, to me, all the yummy things that go into your typical meat and potatoes meal in one dish. So typically what you have is some sort of a meat base with some vegetables and a rich gravy on the bottom of the dish. And then on the top, you usually have some sort of a layer or a crust of usually mashed potatoes. So what's really interesting about this dish is it's a really old dish. I think if you look in Wikipedia, for example, cottage pie has been in use since the late 18th century. So 1791, it says, when the potato was just being used as an edible crop, an affordable crop for the poor. So this is a dish that goes way back. And over the years, I'm sure it's gone through some evolution. And if you just Google recipes for shepherd's pie, you'll probably come back with a million hits or something like that. There's just so much out there. I went ahead and I gathered up a few shepherd's pie recipes. I put in the show notes. So if you go to kitchencounterpodcast.com/3, you can see them there. The reason I'm talking about shepherd's pie today is this last weekend we were in Newport, Oregon, which is a small town on the central Oregon coast. And we were there celebrating my dad's birthday, which I mentioned on the last show. But we went to a little restaurant called Nana's Irish Pub. In my mind, I really love Irish pubs. I love English pubs. I love the food. I love the atmosphere. And I really think Nana's nails it as far as what a great Irish pub should be. And it doesn't hurt that it's in Newport, which is, you know, on the coast. It's a little wet and damp and oftentimes drizzly. And that's kind of the best time you can go to an Irish pub, in my opinion. It's just so warm and inviting. But Nana's Irish Pub serves up probably my favorite shepherd's pie that I've ever had in a restaurant. They have a small twist on it. So it's, you have a typical base of your meat, I think peas and carrots and things like that. But instead of doing a mashed potato crust, they do a smashed red potato crust, which is really good. And that's basically just where you take some maybe young red potatoes or fingerling potatoes and you kind of stew them and then or cook them. And then instead of mashing them or removing the peels or really doing a lot to them, you basically just you drain them and then you maybe crush them halfway with a potato masher or a spoon. And then what you end up with are these kind of half whole potatoes, and they put those on the top of their shepherd's pie. And then what I really love about it is you can also order their shepherd's pie with a layer of cheese on top of that. And if you really want to go crazy, you can get hot sauce with it, which I've never had shepherd's pie like that before. I've had it with cheese, but never with cheese and hot sauce. And I have to say it's unbelievably good. It's just so good. I can't eat it any other way, at least when I go to Nana's. Do yourself a favor. If you're ever in Nye Beach in Newport, you have to stop off at Nana's Irish Pub and try their shepherd's pie. And by the way, the rest of their food is pretty darn good too. So if you're interested in just checking out Nana's, if you're in the area ever, or if you live in Oregon, you can find them on the web at nanasirishpub.com. I put that link in the show notes as well. After going to Nana's and having their shepherd's pie, I thought, wow, sounds like a perfect topic for the next episode, especially since fall has arrived and it's getting cooler and it's going to be easy for folks to get into the kitchen. Even in the summertime, if you have a nice, cool kitchen and it's air conditioned, you're typically not in the kitchen making these sorts of heavier, hotter dishes. So now is the perfect time to give this a try. I mentioned earlier, I rounded up a few recipes. I put them in there. Some of them range from very traditional to a little bit different. I think I put a Mario Batali recipe in there, which looks fantastic. You'll have to check that out. It's got a few twists that elevate the dish, I think, a little bit beyond maybe its humble origins. But out of the list, my favorite recipe is the Gordon Ramsay recipe. It's simple. It's delicious. It uses some red wine to really make the gravy for the meat stand out. So I'm not going to go in the detail of how to make shepherd's pie, but a couple of things I've noticed as I've tried to make it over the years. Two things. Make sure when you make your shepherd's pie that the meat filling portion is moist. If it's dry, it's just going to get crumbly and it's not going to work with the potatoes. And then regarding the potatoes, when you make a shepherd's pie, every time I ever make it, I always end up making way more potatoes than I need. And I have this mental condition, I guess, that when I make too many potatoes, I feel like I have to use them all. So a lot of times when I make shepherd's pie, I make the mistake of putting the filling in and then putting a really, really thick layer of potatoes on top. And then what happens when you bake the pie in the oven, everything kind of cooks down below those potatoes. And if you're not careful, what you're going to end up with is like a half inch thick layer of the meat filling portion and like 3 inches of mashed potatoes. And it's just way out of balance. It's too dry. Too many potatoes. So when you're making your shepherd's pie, just make sure you are very conservative with the potato crust. A little bit will go a long way with that. So just be aware that your filling will cook down. All right. So that's my shepherd's pie spiel. If you happen to get in the kitchen and make one, I'd love to get some pictures or some feedback at feedback@kitchencounterpodcast.com. Or if you have a favorite recipe for shepherd's pie that you'd be willing to share, if you send it over to me, I'd be happy to put it on the website, kitchencounterpodcast.com. I'll give you credit, but we can get sharing some really delicious recipes. So the other thing I wanted to talk about in this episode is this weekend also I had a chance, my brother Randy, who lives in Colorado, was visiting, and I asked him if he would be willing to have a conversation with me on the show. And he said he thought it would be a great idea to talk about cooking clubs or dinner clubs. And I thought that was a great idea too, because over the years, he's been doing this for a while, and I've talked to him about this before, and we've had conversations about this before, but I don't belong to a cooking club. I've never started one, but every time he talks about it, I get really excited about it and interested, and I think maybe I should do that, and then I get busy. But I'm going to play an interview I did with my brother Randy here in a second, and he goes over some basics about what a cooking club is. And when I had first heard the term cooking club, I assumed it was everybody makes a dish, you get together in somebody's house, like a potluck, and you all eat that. But he says it's really not that way. It's really you get together and you cook together, and that's what really makes this kind of neat. And so I'm going to play that interview now, and then when we come back, I have a couple of comments on it, and then we'll wrap up. My brother is here, Randy, and he had a great idea. He wanted to talk about dinner clubs, and I thought that would be a great topic because in my first episode, I talked about one of the things that might be holding you back from cooking, and some things I hear people say is they don't have anybody to cook for, and maybe they don't feel like getting into the kitchen and experimenting and cooking. So I thought this might be a cool way that people can get involved and have a reason to cook and have some fun and experiment. So thanks for being here, Randy.
Thanks, Brock.
Dinner clubs, what's going on? Now, why don't you give me the background, first of all, because you actually are part of a dinner club.
Right.
So give me a little background on that.
So it's really it's kind of a cooking club. We refer to it as a dinner club. And my wife, Julie, and I had always had this idea of getting together with a group of friends to cook together. And didn't want to do it as a potluck. We actually wanted to cook together. We happened to know another couple, and they kind of had similar ideas. So one weekend, we just decided to plan on this. And we got together four couples, and we created our first dinner club theme, which was Indian food. And so we all prepared various Indian recipes, and we met at one of the couples' houses, and we had a massive amount of food, and we had a really great time. We had drinks along with the food and tried to keep everything kind of authentic within the Indian culture. And so from that point on, it was kind of born. We all committed to kind of moving forward with a regular meeting and forming our own cooking club.
And it's four couples is in your current club right now.
Right.
Now, you said it's a cooking club, not just a potluck. So do you actually all get together in somebody's home and how do you cook with four couples at the same time?
Yeah, so how it works is we rotate amongst the four couples, and the host couple typically will pick the theme for the evening, and then they will also cook the main dish. And then the other three couples, one usually comes up with a dessert, one comes up with a side dish, and one comes up with an appetizer. And this is all done by email, and it's kind of first come, first serve. So whoever jumps in and picks the first side dish or whatever is who's going to cook. They tell everybody what they're going to cook. We usually research around the topic. And then the host couple usually provides some drinks, maybe even an additional appetizer just to go along with the theme. And then what we do is we meet. We all bring our ingredients, and we all prepare the food together. Sometimes it gets a little interesting, depending on the size of the kitchen or how many ovens there are, that type of thing. So it gets very creative. We have to kind of map everything out when we're there, but it's a lot of fun. Creates a lot of friendship, and it's a good time.
If you wanted to start a cooking club, or let's say I wanted to start one, which I'm not currently, I don't do that. I think it's a cool idea. How do you go? I mean, is it really about finding, and how, I suppose the numbers could be different. It could be four couples, or I mean, I suppose go with any size that would be manageable, but how do you find people? Did you just find friends that like to eat and you decided to do this? Or are there any other, I mean, what advice do you have if I wanted to start one?
Yeah. In our first kind of rendition of the cooking club, my wife and I, we love to cook. We like wine and those types of things. So food and wine, we like to do a lot of our own home cooking. And so we wanted to find people that would like that, would enjoy experimenting with all kinds of foods, all kinds of cultures, really open to food and wine and that type of thing. And we knew another couple that was exactly that way. And then when we started talking about it, they happened to know another couple that they knew that would probably fit in with that that type of personality. And then that couple knew another couple. So really, that's how it all started. Now, since then, one couple has dropped out and we've replaced them with another couple that we've kind of gotten to be friends with. So there's been a few little iterations of the couples, but for the most part, it's been really a good time.
And you do this every how often?
We do this about every 2 months.
Okay.
And when we once we meet for a dinner club and we do all the cooking and we have a great time, then before we leave that evening, we all look at our calendars and we pick a date where we all are going to be open, whether it's two and a half months down the road. We pick the date, the host couple, it kind of goes in a rotation, and then the host couple will come up with the theme later on. They'll usually email 3 weeks out before the dinner club and come up with the theme that they have decided for that particular.
And talk about the themes, because you've told me before what some of your themes have been, and they sound really fun, and you can really go kind of crazy if you want. Yeah. It doesn't have to be just kind of plain, boring, run-of-the-mill stuff.
Right,
so,
right.
Give me some examples.
Well, when we first started out, I think, which is probably typical, we started out with kind of cuisines or different countries. So obviously things like Italian and Indian was our very first one.
Which is a pretty brave first one.
Then we did Greek and we did all that kind of stuff. And then we started kind of venturing out to maybe different styles or more regional. So maybe we did like Northern Italian or Southern American, like American South.
Mm-hmm. Comfort food.
Soul food. Maybe we did a barbecue theme. So we started kind of venturing out because after a while you start running out of countries and it starts getting a little bit difficult. So that was kind of how it started.
But now, like, I think you're going to do one in a few weeks.
Yeah, our next dinner club actually is at our house, and we decided to do a breakfast for dinner. So everybody's going to basically be cooking their favorite breakfast or brunch for dinner. We all decided to wear our pajamas for this one, and just to kind of make it a fun theme, my wife and I will probably come up with a couple of drinks, you know, mimosas or Bloody Marys or something that kind of goes along with the theme. In the past, we've gotten quite creative. Sometimes we'll do like a special ingredient. So for example, one time everybody had to make all of their dishes using chili peppers, or one time we used chocolate. Sometimes we use a certain type of food. Like one time it was all pizza. One time it was all burgers. One time it was all raviolis. And we had various fillings for the ravioli. So we've started to get pretty creative. One time, one of the couples came up with a Food Network Chopped competition, and so they emailed out the four ingredients that you had to have. Now, fortunately, we had time to come up with our recipes. It wasn't on the spur of the moment, but it was a good time. Yeah, yeah.
That's such a cool idea. Are these recipes? So you go out and find recipes based on the theme that you're doing that particular club. Are these recipes that you found you ended up using again? I mean, is this something that it's a lot of fun, but has it had some practical like use for you in the kitchen and home cooking and stuff like that? I mean, are you finding that you're learning how to make things you might not have tried to make before? Or
yes, absolutely. Especially when with all the recipes, whether it's a region or a country or a style or something like that. It involves a little bit of research because we want to try to be fairly authentic. Sometimes we kind of come up with our own after doing some research, but probably most of the time it is an actual recipe. Maybe we've tweaked it a little bit, but it has shown us definitely different cooking styles, different cuisines of different countries that we've learned a lot about, not only the food, but the country itself and how to cook it. And then we always try to stay in line with, if we have a wine or a cocktail or something that goes along with the theme. So it's been really educational for us. And then we, a lot of times we pick up a recipe, somebody, cooks something and we all enjoyed it so much that we want to have that recipe. So we kind of put that in our little recipe file as a 5-star recipe from this dinner club.
Here's a question that I would have. I mean, it could be intimidating going from home to home to home to home to different people's kitchens. And if your kitchen isn't necessarily decked out or you don't have a bunch of fancy equipment, is that a problem? Or can you take that into account when you're setting up a supper club or a cooking club?
We kind of take that into account. We are, like our four couples, we have all very different sized kitchens. In fact, my kitchen is the smallest, really, of the four couples. And it gets a little bit tight. But it all works out really good. If there's specific equipment that a couple doesn't have, like for example, if somebody emails me and says, you know, their dish is going to require deep frying or something, we just say, hey, we don't have a deep fryer. You'll need to bring your deep fryer or things like that. So a lot of times people, we've gotten used to the fact that if they're cooking something really specific and it requires a certain utensil or tool or machine, a lot of times they'll load it in the car and bring it just to make sure they're covered for their own dish. So that always works out pretty good.
Okay, so let's talk logistics again a little bit. So if I want to start a dinner club, I need to find some like-minded folks. Doesn't necessarily have to be couples. It can be any sort of a group you want to put together. You need to set up some sort of a rotating schedule.
Right.
Right. So it's whether monthly might be frequent.
Might not be. Might even be a little too frequent.
Might be. Yeah. Like you do it bi-monthly. Yeah. And then you generally just communicate by email. Do you have like rules or is it just kind of, it's a handshake thing. Everybody gets in on it. And do you have people that drop out or not drop out, but does everybody show up every time? Do you have problems that way or has that not been an issue?
Almost everybody shows up all times. There's been occasional time where one person couldn't make it due to a holiday or something. But for the most part, because we pre-plan it, I would say most of the couples show up. So that's probably the big thing. First of all, you got to find couples that really enjoy cooking and want to learn more about cooking and want to kind of enhance their skills. And also kind of have the same types of personalities that you know will become friends or, you know, it'll be a good group. And then the second biggest thing is really the commitment. You've got to say, hey, we're kind of doing this. It's a fun thing. We're going to meet every couple of months and we've got to kind of commit to that. We've had situations where when we were maybe a couple had dropped out and we were trying to replace them, we'd bring in a friend one of us knew that we knew they loved to cook and stuff, but they really had a great time. But it turned out they're so busy or they had other priorities that they couldn't really commit to coming every couple months. So that's probably the big thing to maintain it and to make it really work. You've got to get some pretty committed couples. But we kind of look at it, it's once every couple months. It's really not that big of a deal, and we really enjoy it.
And one of the other things I think would be interesting, or a benefit of this, and I talked about this in my first episode also, is sometimes it can be intimidating to make recipes, to make food and have people eat it because you feel like you're constantly being judged.
Right.
And when people say, oh, it's delicious, I still always wonder in the back of my mind, it's like, do they mean it or are they just being nice?
Right.
So this could be an interesting, I'm sure there's a spirit of competitiveness and you want your food to be great, but
right. It
seems like a very maybe accepting or a nurturing environment to try new things. And if you don't knock it out of the park, people kind of get it because you're all trying new things and you're all experimenting.
Right. And for the most part, you're cooking recipes that you really haven't cooked before. You know, you're researching some recipe that's a region of the world that you're not familiar with, so you really haven't cooked it before. So we're all pretty good cooks, you know, and sometimes, you know, we hit it out of the park, and sometimes we'll make something that for whatever reason just kind of fell flat or something, you know, the oven wasn't the right time, who knows what it was, and it's like, it's no big deal, you know, we just have a good time.
That's awesome. You sent me a recipe that I wanted to share with everybody, and I have to tell you, it's a coleslaw recipe.
Right.
I like coleslaw, but I've never read a coleslaw recipe that my mouth actually watered while I was reading the recipe.
Right.
It really sounds good. Why don't you tell us about it? And I'll also make it available on the website. So if you go to kitchencounterpodcast.com/3 for the show notes for this episode, I'll have a link to that recipe. But tell us about this coleslaw recipe.
Yeah, so it's actually a blue cheese coleslaw, which some people kind of hear that and they're like, oh, that sounds like kind of a weird combination. I don't know if I will like that. But what happened is my wife and I actually went to a restaurant in Denver, Colorado. And that was a side dish. It was blue cheese coleslaw. And it was beautiful. It was a very tasty dish. And I actually asked the chef if he would tell me the recipe, and he wouldn't. He said it was kind of his secret. So I set out on my own to figure it out. And after making a dozen or so blue cheese recipes, I figured it out. And so it's a very unique one because not only does it's got blue cheese incorporated in with the dressing, in with the Greek yogurt was one of the key ingredients that I discovered. But it also has golden raisins in it. It's got chopped smokehouse almonds, which really adds a crunch.
That was the part cool, that to me, I thought, wow, I've never thought about putting smoked
almonds in a coleslaw.
Yeah.
And then it got me thinking, it's like, wow, what else could you put smoked almonds into?
Exactly.
That would, it would just kick it up. Anyway, sorry.
Yeah, no, so that's what we did, and we've pretty much perfected it. And so I made that because it's kind of pretty much my own recipe, I made that for our barbecue theme. So I think the host they cooked some ribs and some other barbecued meats, and so the blue cheese coleslaw I thought was a good fit for that. So that's what I cooked for that dinner club.
And my last episode, I talked about ribs. So
yeah,
since there's still a little summer weather left, you can make some ribs. You can whip up this awesome blue cheese coleslaw.
Absolutely.
And check it out on the website. Cool. Thanks, Randy.
Hey, thanks, Roger. Appreciate it.
All right.
So there you have some insight on cooking clubs, and I really do think it's a neat idea. And whenever I talk with my brother Randy and we talk about his cooking club, it's exciting because they're always coming up with interesting themes. And certainly if you're at home cooking for just yourself or your family or the occasional guest, you're probably not going too crazy and trying, you know, only ravioli dishes or dishes only made with chili peppers or those sorts of things. So I know one time they did, if I remember right, dishes that all had to have some sort of alcohol component to them or spirits, you know, rum, whiskey, that sort of thing. So you can do a lot of fun things. And one component of this we didn't really talk about when in that conversation, but I thought about right afterwards. And what we did talk about in the conversation is how it can be kind of a nurturing way for people to get together and try new things, and you're kind of all in it together. And maybe if you don't execute a dish perfectly, no big deal, because everybody's kind of in that same boat at one point or another. But on the other hand, when you get into a group like that, I would imagine, as with anything, so for example, you know, if you want to get into an exercise routine or you want to lose weight, if you do it with somebody else, it's usually easier because you have somebody else sort of holding you accountable and setting some standards, and you're, you know, there's a competitive aspect to it. So just like with that, I think in a cooking club, it can push you maybe a little bit out of your comfort zone, or it can push you to try your best and to really want to knock it out of the park, you know, because you're cooking for other folks that are trying to do the same thing. So I think that's a great aspect of a cooking club as well. And it sounds like a lot of fun. And if any of you have experience with cooking club, if you have a cooking club, if you really want to get one started, I would love to hear how that's going, or some of the ideas or some of the things that you've used to keep your cooking club going, or some of the themes you've tried. And you can do that again by emailing me at feedback@kitchencounterpodcast.com. Or again, you can try that new voicemail system I've got by calling me at 971-208-5493. You leave a voicemail, I will get it on the show. Okay, so if you want to get in touch other ways with the Kitchen Counter Podcast, you can check us out on Facebook at facebook.com/Kitchen Counter Podcast. I started a Twitter account at TKC Podcast. And again, you can email it feedback@kitchencounterpodcast.com. If you like what you heard today, I would love it if you consider going over to iTunes and subscribing to the podcast, or leave me a positive review. It really helps in the iTunes store rankings. All right, until the next time we get together, I hope you get into the kitchen and you start cooking some delicious food for your family and friends. And remember, it's fall, it's open season on those awesome one-pot dinners. And in upcoming episodes, I'm going to have some really fantastic, rich, comforting recipes to share with you. So until next time, this is Roger at the Kitchen Counter Podcast.